on the show. So please welcome to Just Energy Radio from GizaDeathStar.com, Joseph Farrell. Hey, Joseph, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, Rita. Thank you for having me on.
So I got your book, your new book, brand new book, which I wasn't expecting, The Grit of the Gods, and I was just kind of blown away with the material. But I felt like I was a little bit behind the power curve as far as where we're going to be going with that book.
Okay.
Because it starts off talking about a cosmic war.
Uh-huh.
And I think to kind of get everybody up to speed with where we're going with our conversation today, we need to talk about this cosmic war.
Okay. Well, I write my books, Rita, in a kind of a pre-planned order. In fact, right now I'm writing four books at the same time, and I have a further four laid out after that. So in other words, I pre-plan the order that my books occur in. And they're all kind of, they're meant to be read, you know, as one big book, really, and they're all kind of plugged into each other. But I wrote a book, I don't remember the exact year, I think it was 2006, called The Cosmic War, and then the subtitle of that should speak very plainly what the book is about. The book subtitle is Interplanetary Warfare, Modern Physics, and Ancient Texts. And basically, Rita, what I do in the book is I outline a theory in modern astronomy that was really kind of revived by a former astronomer at the U.S. Naval Observatory by the name of Dr. Tom Van Flander, and he's since passed away. But basically what he concluded was that the asteroid belt in our own solar system is an exploded planet, a planet that blew up, all right? Now, the interesting thing that Dr. Van Flandern talks about, and I review his theory in that book, The Cosmic War, the interesting thing about it is here you have an astrophysicist, and he essentially says, or comes down to the point, that there really are no good natural physics models as to why a planet should suddenly and spontaneously explode. So there's one cryptic little comment in his book that he says it could have been done as a deliberate act employing a technology. In other words, in an act of war, much like the Star Wars movies. So what I do in the book is I go back and examine in particular certain Egyptian texts, the Edfu temple texts, and then certain Mesopotamian and Hurrian epics. And I do so with a view to outlining the actual course of that war, who's fighting, what they're fighting over, what they're fighting for, and the possible technologies that they're fighting with. So that's kind of where Grit of the Gods picks up, because in Grit of the Gods, one of the things I talk about in the cosmic war is at the end of that war, you had obviously survivors, and they do what survivors after any major war do. They steal away their secret technology, or they try and gain technology from the vanquished party in the war. They make deals and so on and so forth. So in the books that I've been writing after the Cosmic War, I've been kind of detailing the activity of these surviving elites, and that's really what Grid of the Gods is about, because in my opinion, the global grid system was set up by these people.
Okay, so what we're talking about basically is there is this war that is being fought by aliens, because they obviously are not on this Earth, although we might be.
Well,
part
I didn't
of
say
aliens.
Whoa, whoa, I didn't say aliens.
Okay.
I said no. I said there was a cosmic war, but I didn't necessarily say that this was alien. In my opinion, you're either looking at one of two things in that cosmic war. I think you're looking at either a very advanced, high, very old human civilization, or you're looking at something that was built or put into place by our genetic cousins, so to speak, or both. My inclination is toward both. But, you know, in saying that, I want to avoid the image of reptilians and little grays, because this is not what the ancient texts say. What they talk about are essentially genetic cousins. So that's the first thing. The second thing, that grid of the gods is, in my opinion, is very clear, is that these elites that are doing this activity after this war are very clearly human. They may be, in some cases, you know, mixtures of humans and what I call our genetic cousins. They may not be, but the real thing I'm concerned about is the activities of these elites.
Okay. Fair enough. Can you describe what you mean by the elites?
Well, in terms of, you know, this has been a major theme in all of my books, whether we're dealing with Nazi survivors after World War II making dirty deals with bankers in London and New York, or if we're talking about ancient times and elites that survived the cosmic war. In the case of the grid of the gods, what I do is I kind of project, and you'd have to go back and read my books to see how I do this, I kind of use World War II as a model to look at what the esoteric tradition and what these ancient texts say. If you look at the esoteric tradition, it essentially tells you that there are two brotherhoods, a white brotherhood and a black brotherhood. And in my interpretation of these ancient texts, where I believe you do have a sophisticated science, I think what you're looking at are the surviving elites from the two sides that fought that cosmic war. In other words, you've got a set of so-called good guys and a set of so-called bad guys. And basically, these elites, in my opinion, are doing several things at the same time. They've got certain long-term goals. They've got certain short-term goals. The short-term goal is that they have to create as quickly as possible a stable basis of civilization, and that's going to require one very important thing. It's going to require commerce. In order to sustain commerce over a wide area, you're going to have a stable system of weights and measures that can be reproduced over a wide area. So I cover that activity in a book of mine that I wrote called Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men, and again in another book called Babylon's Banksters. So they're trying to jumpstart civilization, and in the process of doing this, they're doing something else. If you've just fought a war with high technology and blown apart your infrastructure, then one of the purposes of these elites is to preserve as much knowledge as long as possible over time in a stable fashion so that that knowledge can be reconstructed. And in that view, I look at the creation of myths as primarily an activity that was designed to preserve certain essential scientific truths over time, over a prolonged period of time, so that when humanity got to a similar pitch of scientific development, it would be able to look at these myths and interpret them correctly. So these elites, I think, are involved in a very, very complex game. And one of the projects, obviously, I think, was to design the global grid and to place various objects on that global grid and to, in a certain sense, memorialize some of that science. But also, I think there were other things involved. But anyway, that's I know it's long and involved and complex, but that's it kind of in a nutshell.
And so when you talk about this global grid, are we talking about something similar to like ley lines? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, ley lines, the positioning of things at certain key latitudes and longitudes on the surface of the Earth with, and this is a key point, with respect to a prime meridian that runs through the apex of the Great Pyramid at Giza. Now that's that's the key right there, because In all studies of the grid that have been done by various researchers, this is the conclusion they come to over and over again, that Giza was laid out as the prime meridian of the ancient world, of the ancient high civilization, much like our Greenwich system is today, but it was Giza back then. So it's positioning of certain sites on the globe at certain key latitudes and longitudes with respect to Giza being the prime meridian. The second thing that you'll notice in this activity is oftentimes, and I talk about this in particular in Grid of the Gods, they will enshrine principles of modern science that have only been rediscovered in the 20th century. In other words, you find certain sites around the world, Giza, Nabta Playa in Egypt, where you have the coefficients of the constants of quantum mechanics actually encoded in these monuments. So in other words, whoever built these things was coming from a very, very high scientific culture. They weren't the primitives that you know, archaeology and anthropology like to tell us that they were.
We joke around about that on this show quite a bit.
I'm sure. And it's always good for a laugh, too, when you hear some of the schemes that they come up with to explain these things.
And so how did this whole thing work? I mean, because there's the Giza pyramid, but then there are other pyramids around the globe. Mm-hmm. Are they part of this whole system?
Yes, I believe that they were. And one of the things that I try and do in Grid of the Gods is I concentrate in particular on the Mexican pyramids because they don't get, in my opinion, enough attention by the alternative research community for what I think that they probably were. And this is kind of a long and involved explanation, but basically my argument is that these things are some kind of machines that were deliberately designed to manipulate the physical medium or hyperdimensional physics. And the reason I say that is if you look at the Mexican pyramids, they have lots of terraces, they have lots of corners, they have lots of faces. They deviate, in other words, from the standard true pyramidal design that you find in Egypt. And this is purposeful. This was done intentionally, and it was done for a functional purpose. And the mathematical technique, there is a technique in higher dimensional geometry and higher dimensional physics where what you do is precisely count corners and faces. So in other words, to boil it all down into a nutshell, these things, in my opinion, were created as analogs of objects that exist in more than three spatial dimensions. They're designed, in other words, to somehow interact with or manipulate the physical medium directly. And I think you'll like this, given the bumper to your show, they do so by means of frequency. They do so by means of vibration with these objects. So in my opinion, then what you're possibly looking at when you look at the total global grid is you're looking at really a huge global machine of some sort.
Well, I mean, we've had a couple of shows on that, you know, with the Giza power plant and, you know, my opinion. I mean, I used to be a designer and worked in a company that made microwave repeaters. And when I looked at the inside of the Giza pyramid, I'm like, that looks like a repeater inside you know, a microwave tubing kind of thing.
Yes.
Anyway, okay, so we have this power plant, you know, and there have been people like Tesla, as an example, who, you know, was tapping into the energy of the Earth. We're talking about kind of the same thing, true?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, I spend some time with Tesla in some of my previous books that have, you know, that are kind of the prequels to this one, and I mention him again in Grid of the Gods. One of the things that Tesla mentions very specifically, and I talk about this in another of my books called Babylon's Banksters, he talks about the necessity for his wireless power system to work. He talks about the necessity of gripping the earth. In other words, he sank a deep hole in the ground, quite literally, to anchor his tower that he was building for wireless transmission of electricity. And if you look at most of the pyramidal structures around the world, particularly the ones at Giza, but also the ones at Teotihuacan in Mexico, you will discover that these pyramidal structures have some sort of underground chamber. In other words, they're gripping the earth. They're designed quite literally to vibrate, in my opinion, to vibrate sympathetically with the earth. Now, the interesting thing is that Tesla maintained that his system could be turned into an extraordinarily powerful weapon, and this is exactly what I think that you see in the ancient texts that describe this cosmic war. And I get into my argument for why at least some of these things might have been used as weapons in that book. So, yeah, this is this is all a very interlocked story, believe me.
A pyramid death ray.
A pyramid death ray, yes, essentially, yes, that's exactly it.
Let's talk timing here for a second. We have the cosmic war.
Yes.
You know, okay, there's what traditional archaeology says. And then there is, how do I want to phrase this question? You know, there's the belief that the pyramids in Egypt, well, I mean, there's my belief, which is they're really old. They're more than 3,000 B.C. But when you talk about the South American pyramids, they're usually dated much, much more recent, even than the 3,500 years B.C. You know, give us kind of a timeline.
Right.
When did this war happen and this reconstruction start and all of this activity begin?
All right. This is where it gets very complex. I do not attempt to resolve all the chronological difficulties. What I really attempt to do is to lay them out there so that people can see just how complex this story really is. In the Cosmic War, if you follow the astronomical data that Dr. Van Flandern presented in his elaboration of the exploded planet hypothesis, he concluded that the nearest date for that event could have been 3,200,000 years ago. Now, that became sort of the benchmark date for me as to when that cosmic war occurred. After that point, there is a long period that we don't really know from the records what was going on. We do know from the ancient texts that there appears to have been some genetic tinkering with humanity. We know from certain anomalous archaeological artifacts that archaeologists don't like to talk about that somebody was here on planet Earth prior to the rise of modern man, and that somebody had intelligence and technology. So beyond that, I don't go. Now, with respect to the pyramids,
I like the 3-million-year-old date.
I do too, but it still leaves us with a lot of chronological problems. But with respect to the pyramids, my thinking is this, Rita. If we look at Giza, I'm kind of in agreement with Alan Alford. I think that we're looking at the Great Pyramid, which is by far the oldest structure at Giza. And there, in my opinion, this was absolutely not built by 4th Dynasty Egyptians. Okay, in other words, it's a lot older than standard Egyptology will allow. There are traditions that I mentioned in my various books about the Great Pyramid having a watermark on it that was about halfway up the structure when the casing stones were on it. So in other words, you know, if that's any indicator, it would have been before the deluge, and most people date that to 10,000 BC. So if that's true, then we're looking at something that's far, far older than dynastic Egypt. The second chronological layer would encompass the Sphinx, the Valley Temples, and the Second Pyramid at Giza. And again, I'm in agreement with Alford that these structures show evidence of a technology, a high technology, that was beyond anything that the Egyptians used. And then we have a third layer of construction in the rest of Giza and the rest of Egypt, and that's a key point. So I don't date all pyramids in Egypt to being older than Egypt, but by the same token, I think that some of them are. If we go to Mesoamerica and look at the structures at Teotihuacan, the problem there is that even the Aztecs, when they show up in the Valley of Mexico, Teotihuacan is already there, according to their own tradition, and it's already overgrown with heavy jungle. And basically, they discover the site and they clear it off. So if it's overgrown with heavy jungle, it had to have been there for quite some time. So my thinking, again, is that, you know, there is a case to be made that Teotihuacan at least might be an older site than the Maya or the Olmecs or the Aztecs. Certainly when we go to South America and look at places like Tiwanaku and Pumapunku in Bolivia, those sites are again showing clear evidence of a very high technology and way beyond anything the Incas or anybody else in the region constructed. So again, we're looking at something that perforce has to be very, very old.
Yeah, Tiwanaku just always blows my mind. But you know, something that I saw in your book that I have never seen images of that I was captured by was similar stonework on Easter Island.
Oh, yes.
You know, they only showed the heads. And I saw those pictures. I'm like, get out of town. new little research project for me on the internet.
Yeah, those, you know, again, and that's an interesting thing that you point out there. Those intricately fitted stones on those walls, that's a construction feature that you find not only at Easter Island, but you find it in South America, supposedly attributed to the Incas, but there's no way the Incas built those types of walls. You find similar construction methods in Greece. So in other words, you're looking at a common construction method. You're looking at a high technology that was able to fit all these stones together. So again, I think you're looking at a legacy of an elite that survived that cosmic war and survived with some of their technology intact, that's going around the world doing these things for whatever reason.
So your belief is that these pyramids were defensive units? There are a lot of people that say, you know, that they were to make free energy. But then you have to raise the question, well, free energy for what?
For what? Yes, exactly.
They don't find any blenders anywhere. It's a little confusing in that way.
I don't come to any solid conclusion about what most of the pyramids are for.
Okay, so I don't know if anybody can hear me. We're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to try dialing back in. The book is Grit of the Gods. That's the one we're talking about today, but he has so many other books that are seem just as fascinating. And his webpage is GizaDeathStar.com. Steve, before technology rudely interrupted us, we were talking about what the pyramids were used for.
Well, I don't come to any conclusion per se about all of them. I do have, of course, a series of books on the Great Pyramid in particular, which I think, for various reasons that I get into in those books, was that weapon that was talked about in those ancient texts. But the rest of them, I think, Rita, that the bottom line is that for some reason, the pyramidal shape itself, for some reason, interacts directly with the physical medium, or if you prefer the term, the zero-point energy or the vacuum flux, whatever you want to call it. And the reason why I think that this is the case is partly why I wrote the book Grit of the Gods. And again, it goes to that idea that pyramids are hyperdimensional objects. In other words, they resonate with the same sort of structure in four and more dimensions. The interesting thing that I talk about in the Grit of the Gods, and it's something that I mentioned way back in the Giza Death Star books, is the fact that the Russians undertook a whole series of classified experiments beginning in the Soviet era, and they're still performing these experiments on pyramids, building pyramids all over Russia and doing different types of experiment. And some of their leading physicists have concluded that that's precisely what pyramids are. They are machines that engineer and manipulate the physical medium directly. So, of course, anytime you've said that, Rita, you're dealing with two things. You're dealing with, number one, a potentially limitless, inexhaustible energy supply. And number two, if you weaponize that engineering, you're dealing with a weapons potential that would make a hydrogen bomb look like a firecracker. So, yeah, this is very this is very big stuff.
But it seems like, I'm going to kind of shift it here, it seems like they've been finding other pyramids. You know, I think it's really exciting.
Yes.
You know, in Bosnia, they found that grouping of pyramids. I mean, there are some people that say they're not really pyramids. I'm sorry, I kind of think that they are. And, you know, there's the one in China. I mean, they're everywhere.
Yes, they are. They are. And they're all over, this is the other point, they're all over the globe. And this again, given the fact of their placement, given the fact that they seem to be using, regardless of where you turn, using the same system of measure, this is another key point that indicates that you're in the presence not only of a global construction project, you're really in the presence of people with the same conceptual universe in their head that are laying these things out. So I think, yeah, we're looking at something of not only global extent, but if you've been following the work of Mark Carlotto and Richard Hoagland and Dr. Brandenburg and the people that have been involved in investigating the Mars anomalies, then, yeah, you're going to be familiar with the fact that there's even pyramids on Mars. So, you know, we're looking at something that's a fairly universal phenomenon, both on this planet and apparently elsewhere. And the question is why. And again, I go back to the fact I think that we're looking at hyperdimensional physics, and we're looking at the machines to manipulate that physics.
Who do you think made these pyramids? Earlier you talked about the Brotherhood of Light and the Brotherhood of Darkness. Do you think it was the good guys that built these things, the bad guys?
My inclination right now, Rita, and again, I don't come to any conclusion one way or the other in Grid of the Gods. I'm a very careful researcher in that sense. I don't lay down conclusions too easily, and I let people know that I'm speculating. But in my opinion right now, I think the bulk of them were built by the so-called good guys, all right? In some cases, and I get into this in Grid of the Gods, specifically in Chapter 7 and 8 with the Mayans and Aztecs, in some cases you have an original group that is overthrown by a later group that comes in, and in the case, very clearly in the Aztec case, they start instituting human sacrifices on these structures. So, yeah, I think you've got a clear case of two elites struggling for control over these things, and in my opinion, the original builders were probably the good guys.
Speaking of human sacrifice,
uh-huh.
What does that have to do with the pyramids?
And, okay, this is an excellent question. Briefly, let's go back to what I said I think these pyramids are. I think that they are hyperdimensional machines to manipulate or engineer the physical medium, or if you prefer the term, the zero-point energy, or whatever term you wish to ascribe this, that they're designed as machines to manipulate or engineer the physical medium directly, all right? Now, the key point, and I can't elaborate too much on this in our short period of time, but the key point in ancient thinking, in ancient physics, in ancient cosmology, is that there is a direct link between the physics of the physical medium itself and the physics of consciousness. In other words, there is a direct interface between consciousness and the physical medium. If that be the case, then I think what you have is quite literally a technique of black magic, quite literally trying to shock or traumatize the physical medium into some sort of state where it will be manipulable by people with evil design or evil intention. I think that's quite literally what you have going on. In other words, It's standard black magic, but it's black magic in the sense that it has a physics basis. It's a twisted physics, to be sure. It's a twisted morality, to be sure. But nonetheless, in their thinking, it had a physics basis.
I think you kind of lost me a little bit on that one, Joseph.
I know. I know it's a tall drink of water, but let's imagine. It's difficult to explain, but let's imagine an endless sea of nothing, all right, in which there are absolutely no distinctions whatsoever. Anything that you can imagine does not exist. Now, that's the way the ancient cosmology begins. That nothing, however, is God. It is consciousness itself, and it is able to differentiate itself, and that's what it begins to do. So in other words, all of these ancient cosmologies have a doctrine of primordial unity, and then out of that arises differentiation, and that primordial unity is consciousness itself. But everything that you see that is a result of that initial differentiation is also physical. So let's take a modern physics look at this nothing. Physics will tell you that if you cannot observe anything, you have nothing physical, all right? So if there is a sea of nothing, then in the physics sense, you're talking about creation ex nihilo, all right? So in other words, you have a nothing that differentiates itself as a conscious act, and there is the rise of the physical creation. But at the same time, that also means that everything, to a certain extent, is differentiated consciousness. So there's always, in the ancient thinking, there's always a direct link between consciousness, between intelligence, and the exercise of the will, and the physical medium. So I think what you have in some of these cultures that begin to institute bloody sacrifice or human sacrifice is that they're quite literally trying to traumatize that initial consciousness itself, to manipulate it to do their bidding. That's exactly what I think is going on. It's high magic, but it's also at the same time it's very high physics. Does that help?
Got it. I do.
That's a pretty heavy thing, and I talk about that at some length in Grid of the Gods.
I mean, I understand where there is the notion, and I have this belief that, you know, there was just this consciousness, and then vibration or frequency or intention
exactly. Is
what made the world manifest. But I
right. Couldn't
quite figure out this connection about sacrifice. You know,
right.
But if it's a distorted
yes. Thing
coming in, then it makes sense.
Yes, it most definitely is a distortion, and I talk about that in the book, because over and over again you find sacrifice arising later in these cultures, and arising usually for the reasons that I've outlined. It's an attempt somehow to shock the physical medium and manipulate it, in other words, to gain power over it. So it's a gruesome, grisly, brutal distortion.
But in a lot of those cultures, when you read the text, it seems like, and I see where you're going with this, that the gods started demanding more.
Yes,
quote unquote.
That's precisely it. You have two ideas essentially of God, and I talk about this idea as well in my book Babylon's Banksters. In other words, I've been setting each book up very, very carefully on the basis of previous books, but you have essentially two ideas of God. You've got the idea of the corn god, in other words, you know, a god of fecundity, a god of love that produces everything and creates, in other words. And then you've got a death god. And the reason I put it that way is because you will also find the physics that a society believes in is closely, in ancient times, closely connected to the type of financial policy that they put into place.
I'm not sure I want to touch that one. So maybe let's come back to that one, because I think that's a good place, you know, to kind of bring it into the present. But I have one more past question, and then we can kind of bring it full circle here. Okay, so we have this war, and then they create the pyramids and do all of this stuff on the planet. But it seems
right. Like
after a certain amount of time, everything kind of went kaput. The
yes. Technology
didn't keep advancing. It went backwards,
right. And
we became little cave people with our sticks and stuff.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
What happened? Or
happened to people? Believe it or not, I think that part of the story is intimately and deeply connected with the rise of the idea of a debt god, with the rise of the idea of sacrifice, because in a system where you believe in a differentiated consciousness that gives rise to everything, ultimately, that is a kind of philosophical science or scientific philosophy. In other words, it does not need special revelations, it does not need special religions, institutions, vicars, infallible oracles, because basically that system tells you that everybody is a part of it, all right? I think you see the beginning of the decline of the ability to think freely when you see the rise of religions that claim some sort of special status, you know, to a particular systematized revelation or systematized truth. And I think that's really where you begin to see this decline and things stagnating for so long. And again, part of this has to be also ascribed, I think, to the activity of at least one, if not both, of these elites that are trying to maintain their grip or their hold over humanity throughout the millennia.
But, okay, so they're doing this, religion comes into play. So they're not having the kind of influence they had over the people they did before?
Oh, no, no, no. No. I think, you know, I think quite the reverse. I think in many cases you could write the creation of religion down to the activities of these elites precisely for the purposes of keeping their own hegemony over this knowledge secure and keeping their power over other people secure as they're trying to build back and recover these technologies that they lost in this war. In other words, I view religion itself as the activity of these elites.
To keep people in line.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
All right, so here's the million-dollar question, which I know you covered in a different book, but I'm just going to put it in here. So are we the elites, or are we something separate from them?
What do you mean, we? Humanity?
Humanity. People that we know now. Mankind.
Well, I think the vast bulk of mankind, no, is not a member of these elites. But I do think, yes, I think that these elites have been more or less continuous down through the millennia. And certainly we are looking at modern-day continuations of them. I mean, my word, you only have to look at the financial sector in the modern world to realize that you're dealing with a very powerful, very secretive elite that has exercised influence for a very, very long period of time over the affairs of the West, if not the rest of the world. So that's one elite. In many of my other books, I talk about the Nazis having survived World War II as a real organized post-war power, as a real organized elite. Certainly the communists started out that way and took power in the country. So you've got all sorts of elites. I think to a certain extent you can look at secret societies or fraternities as being to some extent a continuation of these ancient elites. So yeah, they're still around.
Because there are people that claim that groups like the Illuminati, whoever they are, are actually part of this ancient race that has been keeping control. So are we talking kind of the same thing here?
No, I don't. First of all, I'm not a subscriber to the Illuminati as alien or aliens as Illuminati school. The actual Illuminati were a sect that was founded in Bavaria in 1776 by 100% humans. I do think that if you trace the development of secret societies through the centuries, through the millennia, you'll find certain key conceptions always overlapping, and you'll even find overlapping personnel, you know, involved in these activities. But I think you're dealing fully with a human elite. In other words, I don't, you know, I'm not a David Icke follower or anything like that. You know, I don't believe the royal family are a bunch of reptiles or anything like
that. Me either, but you know, whatever. But what's their ultimate goal?
Well,
I mean,
they've had
a lot of time to kind of pull this whole thing together and haven't done so good so far, but what's their goal?
Well, I think the goal is twofold. The first one is the one that everybody thinks about. The first one is quite literally global domination. They want to run the whole show. But I think the second one is, and I'm going to crawl way out on the end of the twig on the limb here, all right? I think their second goal is they want to get off this planet and make contact with whoever it is they think put us here to begin with. I think that's their ultimate goal.
And they're not aliens.
And they're not aliens, no.
Okay, just checking.
Well, I know that sounds strange, Rita, but you have to understand that if you take my books are built on the premise that if you take what these ancient texts are saying seriously and then examine them in the light of modern science, whoever was here before had to have had some very close genetic resemblance to us in the first place. So in other words, we're looking at our cousins with these people. That's what we're looking at. We're not looking at little gray aliens. We're not looking at reptiles. We're looking at, quite literally, another branch of the human genus. That's what we're looking at.
Okay. That I get. Could it be, and I'm just going to go out on a limb here, too, that part of what, the, you know, because you're talking about this multidimensional aspect to what's going on, could it be that they, this is going to sound weird, that they're just basically sucking energy from us?
Yeah, that
you
could
know,
be,
emotional
too.
Emotional energy.
That
I
could
mean,
be, too.
Well,
again,
in,
again, I think that's...
You know, cause,
sorry, go ahead.
I mean, because even in what's going on, you know, it's becoming very polar as far as, you know, positive emotional energy and negative emotional energy, and there's that whole battle of light and darkness that's going on for the soul.
Yes. I think that's exactly what's going on, and again, it goes back to the idea, precisely to why I think that human sacrifice was instituted and then reinstituted under a variety of guises in the modern age. Because again, it's a kind of emotional vampirism, and again, it's trying to traumatize the physical medium, because everybody, as I said, any consciousness interfaces with the physical medium, which is consciousness, very directly. So by causing trauma, you're traumatizing the physical medium itself. And there is, if I can put it this way, there's sort of a group multiplier effect, if you want to put it in grisly terms. And I think that's what's going on. Yes, precisely.
I mean, that's just kind of sick and distorted.
Yes, it's very twisted. And it's very sick, it's very twisted and very distorted, yes.
But then again, that's based on our views and our values and what we believe to be true. And what apparently we've been told by these elites that we should believe, because that's all been passed down to us through time.
Well, yeah, yes and no. Murder still remains murder. That's the problem. You have to have a willful intention if you're going to traumatize the medium in that way or seek to do so. You still have to have the willful intention to do evil. And know that that's what you're doing. But ultimately, that, and again, I don't get into this at great length in Grid of the Gods, because this is such another deep subject, another deep aspect of this ancient cosmology that I'm planning with the co-author that helped me write Grid of the Gods, a fellow by the name of Scott DeHart, that we're planning to do another book where we're exploring that aspect of the problem almost completely, or exclusively, I should say, because that's really where the rubber meets the road. And again, you're dealing with the rise of what we call debt god. You're dealing with the rise of bloody sacrifices, and that's always somehow bound up with the idea of some sort of special religion, some sort of privileged priesthood, and so on and so forth.
How did the priesthood fit in this? I always was led to the belief that the priesthood was the people who held the information and then passed it down and on via their traditions, their secret traditions.
Yeah, they do. But you've got to recall that there's two activities going on here. We have a good elite and we have a bad elite. So one of these groups is going to be seeking to pass things down in as uncorrupted a form as possible, and the other one is going to be looking to distort that transmission to the public.
Geographically speaking, have you come up with any kind of observation as to where the good gods were versus where the bad gods were?
That is an excellent question, and I think if you're going, just crawling out on a limb again, I think if you're going to locate where the so-called bad guys are, they rise out of the Middle East, all right? But that's not exclusively true, because you find the same thing happening in Mesoamerica with the Aztecs. But there's an interesting Middle Eastern. I'm not even going to say what it is, because, you know, when people read it, it will really blow their minds. But there's an interesting connection between the Aztecs and the devil's name that they say introduced human sacrifice to the Aztecs and the Middle East. And I won't say any more other than that. That'll be my teaser.
Okay, when's that book going to be out so we can find out the
answer
to that question?
It's in Grid of the Gods. It's in Chapter 8 of Grid of the Gods.
All right, I'm going to have to go look that one up.
Mm-hmm. It'll blow your mind when you read it. I guarantee you.
Like I said, you know, I got the book yesterday, and I was like, how fast can you read through this book? You know, because I had a very full day.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting that you're saying that the bad guys are in the Middle East, especially considering that from, you know, an United States or Western model, all of the religions come from the Middle East. And, you know, the Judeo-Christian Islam religions all are Middle East-based.
Right.
And so if those are the bad guys, that's a little scary, actually.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And like I say, there's a connection with the Aztecs that will blow your mind.
Well, see, now you have me thinking. God.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. So we have a couple of minutes left.
Uh-huh.
Any teasers about any of your other books that you have coming up? I mean, I know this just got released, so.
Yeah, this one I literally got my own copy last Friday. No, I usually don't tell people what I'm writing about, and the reason I do that is because I've had in my career as a writer, I've had to move once, quite literally, for my own safety, and I just don't talk about what I'm working on until it's actually at a publisher and it's in the printer's hands and being printed. Then I talk about it. But right now, Grid of the Gods is the book that's most recent, and then the one immediately before that, James Giants, Monsters, Men. I'm working on four books right now, so I'm hoping to have one of them finished in the next couple of months. And I can say that will be in the general area of my Nazi books. And then another book I'm working on with my co-author of Grid of the Gods, that's going to take some longer time to come out. We're hoping that it'll be out next year.
Can I just laugh now? You know, this does
sure.
not happen to me, except when I do shows about ghosts. This happens to me all the times when I do shows about ghosts. Although, no, I'm going to take that back. I had John Lear on, and we had this problem a lot. Maybe they don't want you talking about this stuff.
Probably not.
It could happen. all right, now I need to recollect my thoughts here for a second. Oh, okay. So since you can't really talk about what you have coming up, maybe you can give us a little teaser about your last book that I was hoping we would get to spend some time on. And I know I don't have the full title, but Man...
Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men?
Yeah, that one. Wait, say
well,
the title again.
Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men. That book is... Believe it or not, that book is directly related to Grid of the Gods, because I'm talking in Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men about another possible set of activities of the elite, namely creating systems of measure and helping engineer mankind and other nasty things into existence. So, yeah, it's all part of one big series of books that I've been studying ancient things and ancient technologies and texts.
Okay, so since I don't have a copy of that book in hand and I can't read the answer, why were we created? Why were
it's
we
very simple.
Genetically engineered?
It's very simple. If you read most of the texts, both from Mesopotamia to India to Mesoamerica, we were created to serve the gods. We were quite literally created as intelligent slaves, as
well,
property.
Sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, but there's a catch to the story. And that's the part
of
the story.
I hope it's a good one.
Yes, it is. But yes, it is. But it's it's something that I'll be discussing in a future book.
You're the ultimate tease there, Joseph.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at the clock and our time's up, so we need to go. Any last words for the listeners?
Yeah, if they want to order my books, they can do it right off my website, on my web store, which is www.gizadeathstar.com, and they'll get their books.
And you have 14 books?
Yes, 14 books out now, counting Grid of the Gods.
Wow. Prolific. I mean, I'm working on 4, and I thought that was a lot, you know, and then I talk to people like you, and it's like, God, how do you do that? Let me ask another question. Do you do much speaking, or are you going to be at any conferences or anything like that coming up?
Well, I would like to. I haven't been invited to any conferences at all this year, except overseas. But I've done conferences before, but I haven't had any invitations this year. I don't know why, but I certainly would like to. If people want to invite me to conferences, I'll be happy to go speak.
Okay, well, if you're listening, invite Joseph Farrell, because he seems like
yeah.
a pretty fun guy.
How's
that?
Try to be. Thank you, Rita.
All right, Joseph. Thank you so much for coming on the show. The music is going to come.